We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Last season, College Football Saturday, at least as we've come to know it, was completely upended. As fans, it was a challenge to channel the same fervor for game day, with altered schedules and viewing experiences. Now, as we look to move forward, we take one final look back at the awkward season that was and how we as fans made it through. From the Solid Verbal, this is a special production. So, now what? Welcome back to the final installment of So Now What? This time we're talking about the fan experience. I am joined as always by my good friend Dan Rubenstein. Dan, how are you doing?
I'm great. And I could not be a bigger fan of yours or the panel of Verballers that come on the show or that came on the show to weigh in on the fan experience. So I'm especially good today, Ty. Thanks for asking.
We had a panel of Verballers helping us with this final topic, the fan experience. Thus far, we've discussed things like what it meant to make decisions from the conference level, or as a coach to run a team, or as a player to be on a team, or as a broadcaster to try and broadcast the game. There is no doubt, though, that perhaps the biggest impact was felt by the fans trying to watch the product at home, trying to root for the product in the same way, in the same fervor that they would otherwise. Dan, the 2020 season was far from usual. And I think it's a topic you and I grappled with quite a great bit on the show, trying to figure out how exactly do we feel about this 2020 season. For a long time, as you recall, throughout the course of the summer, we didn't think we were going to have a season. And then certainly as news broke from the Big Ten and the Pac-12, as caseloads went up, the deeper we got into the fall, there was a great deal of uncertainty. Eventually, though, they pull the thing off, they pull it together, and there we are as fans, certainly as podcasters, trying to place it all. What were your thoughts in the moment?
Well, which should be noted, also fans grappling with going to games, traveling to games with increased security measures and masks and allowances of people in or lack thereof. So it's not just odd for those of us who didn't go to games in 2020, but I'm sure on some level it was both very nice to be able to go to games and forget all of the weirdness and tragedy going on in the world at the time. So it must have been nice to be in a stadium if everything was sort of done properly, but also strange to be in a stadium with people separated out and relatively empty or somewhat empty or super duper empty. So it was strange no matter where your vantage point was for the 2020 season, I think.
How did you feel about it, though, as a home viewer?
It was odd. It was odd. I've talked about it, you know, before that there's so much of the TV experience. And we talked about this with Anish Shroff some, where you know, seeing the wide swaths of empty stadium when a touchdown was scored. And usually those sweeping camera shots are of fans going nuts or fans with the surrender cobra and super sad and bummed and deflated. And I think that kind of thing helps to define how we react to a situation, especially if we're not personally invested in a team playing in that game. But it adds so much. The TV experience of a full stadium and the emotions contained therein really helps to tell the full story of what we're watching. And so that affected me, the fact that, you know, I moved and I was watching these games for the most part alone when I'm used to, you know, watch parties and friends coming over that are into college football. I mean, you know, cry me a river. That's, I had it the best of basically anybody in 2020, if that's my worst situation. But it was different. It definitely lost something. The culture of college football was, you know, aside from the actual serious losses in the world, that was the biggest hit that our sport felt, that that cultural element. So it is the least serious victim of the 2020 football season.
I was incredibly torn on how to feel about the season, because on one hand, there was a pandemic raging. It was the elephant in every room, right? On the other hand, they were going to play the season. And we are a college football podcast. So we had to figure out how we were going to do our best with it. In truth, I never thought they'd be able to pull it off. I thought the whole year through that something was going to happen, that caseloads would spike, whatever, that the whole thing was going to be called off in the beginning, then in the middle, and then towards the very end. We talked about it on the show. The fact that they made it through relatively unscathed, it should be its own topic that somebody covers at some point in the future, because I think that does represent an accomplishment. But there was this source of conflict among fans. We asked our panelists, like, how did you feel about things?
We didn't know if we were supposed to be happy. Meanwhile, there's a pandemic raging.
That conflict, right? It was weird.
Yeah, it was just like, it was like a weird feeling. It was like, you didn't think you should be doing this, but of course, you know, we're all like addicted to college football, so we're obviously going to watch it. So, but it was, yeah, it was strange. It was like a weird feeling to be, get excited, but also there's that part of your mind that you're just kind of like, yeah, I don't know if this is, I don't know if I should be enjoying it this much.
So given this sense of conflict that I know you and I both felt, I'm curious to get your level of excitement going into the season. I thought about it a great deal before hitting the record button. For me, it's probably on the same level as the third place game for the World Cup. I'm going to watch it. I enjoy watching it. But there was a sense that this was a consolation prize, and any football we got amid a pandemic was going to be bonus football. And so I was fine with it.
So you're saying my excitement level for last fall, for the fall of 2020, not for the upcoming year.
For the upcoming year, I suspect it'll be much, much more intense. But for the 2020 season, for me, yeah, on the same level as the third place game for the World Cup.
So I'll stick with your World Cup analogy. I will say a relatively interesting World Cup matchup not involving my country, the United States of America. So like Netherlands, Spain, with more stakes than third place on the line. But at the same time, whatever happens in that match does not necessarily going to, it's not going to affect my sleep. It's not going to affect how I read about the sport. It's just, it's good to watch, but I don't have the personal stakes like I normally would in a normal year or for my country if I'm watching that matchup. So that's where I'll go there. It was, you know, it was more difficult than usual. I started baking pizza for that specific reason often, where I just like, okay, I'm going to watch football, but I want to figure out something to invest in at the same time and to get better at. If I'm stuck home, I'm going to be, because otherwise, if I had people over, I would be cooking, I would be doing new stuff. And so I needed that outlet as well. But yeah, that's where my excitement was. It was nice to have the sport as that distraction. But at the same time, I can't claim my heart wasn't fully in it like it would be otherwise.
One of the things that we saw, one of the things that I know many other sports podcasts also saw, downloads were down in the entire sports vertical. Downloads were down. I think enthusiasm was down. That sense of conflict was pervasive all throughout the sports world, as was this impulse to sort of find a way to take up the time. You took up baking pizza. Our panelists talked a great deal about getting into things like smoking meat or reading more or taking up other activities that could fill up the time. It was interesting to get that perspective and know that it wasn't just us that were feeling it. One other thing that I guess predictably came up in our panel discussion was this topic of the TV product. We've talked about it time and again. We did a whole series of episodes about it last week, what it was like on the back end to try and put that together. What was it like on the front end?
What I noticed watching at home was that the lack of fans in the stands was actually more apparent on TV than I was initially anticipating. And that was actually a little bit of a bummer for me. College games, like, the fans are everything. So something that I underestimated going into it was the lack of fans at the game, how that came across on TV.
So I didn't mind the TV product as much as some. I am not in the majority on that opinion. And that could be because of how you and I have to watch a million games every weekend. Paying too much attention to any one game is generally something that's very hard for you and I to do because we cover this on the national level. But specifically, if you are tuned into just that one game, trying to soak up the experience as much as you can from your living room, I totally understand how you'd come away from that experience feeling very underwhelmed, feeling like there is something missing because there are no fans, because the ambient noise isn't there, maybe even because the quality of play, at least in the early going, was something to be desired. I get it. One of Cole's points was that he made peace with this because he felt it was more or less a made-for-TV product, and that was it.
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway for me was just I was excited saying, okay, it's going to be a TV product. That's okay. But the TV product was really
not great.
Well, the fans, yeah. So
you, I think, tend to agree with Cole. You weren't as gung-ho on it or at peace with it, let's say, as I was.
Yeah, I mentioned this when we talked with the panelists, that there was an element of the entirety of two football programs sneaking into a stadium to play a game, both the most and least important people on campus. I guess it's the most important in terms of revenue, but the least important is like, well, it's not the most academic pursuit. We understand why college football is played and we love why college football is played. But, you know, it's one of those things where you're making a deal with yourself about why college football players are playing in empty stadiums or half empty stadiums or quarter empty stadiums when it's such a different world. It's such a different universe. So there is definitely that strange element that makes it feel like the newspaper stabs of the Michigan and Michigan State papers are playing each other the Friday night before the game ahead in front of an empty stadium. There was that feel to at least a lot of Big Ten and Pac-12 football. Obviously the SEC had a good deal more energy, ACC a good deal more energy, Big 12 to a certain extent more energy, but it was weird that some games would look a certain way and some games, huge games, would look a totally different way. And you'd have a huge matchup in the SEC and Michigan, Ohio State get canceled. It was just this very strange day of television every week.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. it's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
One of the other topics that was very popular in our discussion, Dan, was setups. How do people set up to watch these games? Either just by themselves, with a group, as best they could. We talked about it, I remember, in the moment a great deal about putting together some sort of outdoor setup. We asked our panel, did you do anything outside? How was that?
For the BC Notre Dame game this year, we did a whole backyard setup. One of my buddies came out and, you know, it was just, you know, something to get excited for amid a drab year otherwise. And so we moved like a fire pit. We bought a fire pit. We, you know, moved a TV outside. I want to say it was fun, but, you know, the cold and just being outside and all that combined, and then the game, it ended up being, you know, a little bit underwhelming.
Were you able to do any kind of watch parties this year?
No, I mean, the only people that were this past fall in my house on Saturdays, it was basically limited to me and my wife and my toddler and my, I guess, slightly extended family who were not really going anywhere. So no, I remember for the Super Bowl, I had the extended family over. And that, when I say that, I mean like three people. So that felt like the most social event of the calendar year related to football and just social gatherings. But otherwise, no, it was a lot of solo time. We did lose, Ty. You know what we lost? We lost the always exciting phone under the table at a wedding during a big game ability.
We did.
I've watched, I mean, I remember when Boston College upset USC in 2014. Does that sound right to you? I lost that ability. I watched that underneath during speeches at a wedding. The speeches weren't that good. And I think there was a Michigan State Wisconsin game in 2010, 2009, somewhere on there. There was just like, there is that element of like being a little sneaky and watching college football when you're not supposed to. And it was largely lost this past fall. So that was the sort of the weird stuff going through my mind during my solo watch parties.
Most of the games for me were at home. And interestingly enough, in many ways, for me, it was an easier season just as the host of this show, because we typically have a lot of family gatherings in the fall for birthdays and holidays, for nieces and nephews and all sorts of things like that.
Oh, we can look through our text records of you asking me for updates because you're at a christening. And you're like, wait, who's hurt? Sam Ellinger's hurt. Just that's how you would take in college football news for 45 minutes when you were unavailable. Otherwise, it's true.
Everything was off this year.
Mm-hmm.
At least for bigger groups, it was off. So getting in front of a TV, at least for me, was much, much easier. And so I at least appreciated that aspect of it. Virtually nothing else, but to get in front of a TV, at least for me, felt like it was a much lighter lift this past season. A lot of folks found themselves, though, in the situation of having to watch games alone that they might otherwise watch with a group. And this gets back to something Dave Jones said. It certainly gets back to points that we discussed for the last couple weeks. College football as a social sport is something that should not be undersold.
And I was actually on my honeymoon in Rhode Island, of all places, because of COVID, during the Michael Penix breach. And me and my wife were basically by ourselves in a setting where it would have been a very different feeling. Like, imagine being in a sports bar with that moment.
I was outside on my patio watching on an iPad next to my fire pit. And that's when I saw the play where Michael Penix supposedly hit the pylon. We know he didn't, but that's fine.
I was reading pizza message boards on my laptop while out of one corner of an eye watching the game. Yeah.
So for me, that definitely did not represent the norm. Watching a game out by the fire pit on an iPad, it was just not something that I had done a whole lot of. And I remember thinking at the time, I need to fine tune this, because if I can fine tune this, then I can watch games with people. It was all about trying to figure out a way to invite folks over, invite friends over to watch the games with me, because I agree with Andrew. It's a much better experience when you can watch with other people. I know, gosh, how many times over the years you've done watch parties as well. It's just the thing that we do as college football fans. And so while I wasn't able to fine tune that fire pit football viewing the way I would have liked, because it got cold up here in the Northeast, it got cold and it wasn't as enjoyable an experience as I would have liked. It is something I think that I'm going to work on fine tuning and tweaking and getting ready for 2021, because if I can get that where it needs to be, and presumably because the season will start earlier and it will be a little bit warmer in the September time frame, even the early October time frame, than it was when the Big Ten was starting its season, I think I can get a couple good weeks out of that. And that could be potentially a positive that came out of 2020 for me as just a home fan.
It should also be noted, and this is going to sound a little bit silly, but going to college football games with your friends, with your family, with whomever, is good for your health, right? Going places, traveling places, and sharing experiences and experiencing new things and new emotions. If your team has a huge upset out of nowhere because you went to Columbus or you went to Gainesville or you went to Tuscaloosa or whatever, and you got to see your team do something fun or do something that made you and your group incredibly sad, but you all shared that emotion and you ate new food and you drove down a new highway. These things are all good for your brain. And so many fewer people, if that's acceptable grammar, much far fewer people were able to build experiences this past fall. And I think that it legitimately not going to as many games or to any game, I think is not great for somebody's social growth and the social part of their brain. And I'm craving getting that back because, again, going to college football games, be it in your town, be it in a town an hour away, be it a 4-hour flight away, it is good for all of our brains to share experiences. And we had to take a bye year, a lot of us. And that sucks.
The gap year of college football fandom, as it were. We did talk, as you would expect, a great deal about not being able to travel to games. So many of our Verballers, so many college football fans dropped the marker on the calendar. Whether it's a couple games a year, one game every 5 years, it's something to get excited about. And it wasn't something that really was easy to do or could be done.
Our group of people, we've been to every bowl game for the past 10 years, and we didn't do that this year. It was, I think that detraction really stood out. And we were still friends, but we didn't have that marker on the calendar.
How many emails do we get every year, every week, every month? Hey, me and my friends, you know, are able to get away from our wives, husbands, kids, whatever. And we choose a new place every year. You know, last year we went to Clemson. The year before that, we went to Oregon. The year before that, we went to A&M. And that's that thing that connects people. And so people love the college football experience. And so when he says put down a marker, that's real. You know, people look forward to going to that new college town, that new campus, that brewery, whatever, and it's always good in life to have something to look forward to. And I'll you know, stomp my feet one more time. It's a lost element that is obviously not the most serious or important thing in this, but you know, you notice it when it's gone, at least for a year.
I think one of the main takeaways for me after talking to folks about their experience from the past year is really just to reemphasize that college football as a social entity is really what makes it special. And without that flavor, without being able to watch with other people, either in person or at home on the TV, or even just tailgating outside of a stadium with friends and family, that was a real loss. And it was through no fault of our own. We really had no choice. I think in part two, we'll talk a lot more about where we feel things are headed and why we're excited to close the book on this really quirky chapter of college football and of American and world life, as it were, and move forward into 2021, hopefully to achieve a new sense of normalcy. In conclusion, I think we had a couple lines here that really hit it best in looking back over the past season.
Last year, I was in on the football and out on the storylines. You know, like so many of the storylines were so dour and I just really didn't want to follow along.
Followed football because it was football, not necessarily in on the pageantry, in on the narrative, in on the stuff that we like to talk about to get folks jazzed for a season. It just wasn't something that people were swallowing whole the way they might otherwise. Cole was a little bit more direct.
I just sort of mailed in my fandom last year. There were nights where we didn't watch, you know, the ABC main game or whatever. Yeah, we took a much more casual approach to it last season, for sure.
Much more casual approach to it, Dan. Not all in on the narratives. Couldn't gather in groups to watch the games. A made-for-TV product. Did the best we could with it. I think that sums it up.
Which is a huge shame, by the way, because the narratives add so much to the sport. Now, obviously, people can get lost in them. But the fact is, when you have players emerging, when you have coordinators or head coaches or assistants, whatever, emerging, when you have a crazy upset that all of a sudden vaults a team into a conversation of some kind, like those storylines, those narratives color everything in with the sport. And so I can understand why everything felt sort of hollow for a lot of people, even if they were watching. It's totally understandable. And I relate. I definitely relate. And I'm sure you do too, right? Like, how excited were you about a largely successful Notre Dame season, where they didn't have very many close calls? Obviously the Clemson win and during the regular season was an overtime win. And I guess the Louisville game was kind of ugly, but by and large, this was a Notre Dame team that laid waste, comfortably beat all of its regular season opponents until the ACC championship game and playoff. Were you able to enjoy that anywhere near how you would enjoy it in, I don't know, any other really successful Notre Dame year?
It wasn't a huge drop off for me, but I will tell you that watching the Clemson victory up at Mama H's house, sitting 12 feet apart and wearing a mask was not something that added to the experience.
Sure.
And it was a bummer. And we did it because we had to, because I didn't want to make my mother sick.
Right.
But this is just sort of where we were at with it. And it was a great season for Notre Dame. It was a bit of an unexpected season.
Did it serve as a distraction at all to you? Like, was it like a cool thing you looked forward to because it had nothing to do with social media or politics or commissioners or, you know, anybody barking at each other? Was it at all a nice distraction?
I think it was a welcome distraction.
Good.
On the weekends. But when taken in totality of everything else going on in the world at that time, it was really hard to focus on one thing. It was hard to focus on that and take the same level of joy from it that I would otherwise.
I can tell you, as an Oregon fan who had a very Oregon had an up and down year, you know, losing the way they did to Oregon State and Cal, but at the same time, beating USC, getting into the Pac-12 championship game under unusual circumstances and ending up in the Fiesta Bowl. That Fiesta Bowl loss was, as I was watching it, it shifted from me being disappointed in the inconsistencies of Oregon's offense and the defense's inability to get off the field to, you know what? I know it's a weird year, but good for the Clones. Good for Iowa State. There shouldn't be an asterisk on this. This is a major, major deal. And the sting of the loss wasn't nearly as pronounced just because of my lack of usual investment. But at the same time, I'm sure Iowa State fans were especially happy to have that sort of distraction, that level of success. So it kind of made me happy for them. It was that silver lining for me.
I was thrilled that Notre Dame made the playoff. I was thrilled that they got a crack at Alabama. I wasn't as thrilled by the end result, but as distractions go, amid a pandemic and social unrest for a multitude of reasons, I'll take it. Thanks for listening to The Fan Experience Part 1. Join us on Thursday for Part 2 as we close the book on 2020 and get ready for 2021. Special thanks to our esteemed panel of Verballers, Andrew, Dan, Cole, Taylor, Nathan, Mark, and Squishy. Don't forget to visit our Patreon at verballers.com.